Hello and welcome to a new episode of Bull Talks, Dialogues and Insights from Southeast Asia, curated by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung. I am Franci, your host, and in this video series, we bring together voices and perspectives from across the Southeast Asian region, those who are working toward a more sustainable, just, and inclusive future. We explore ideas that connect people and the Southeast Asia region, from climate resilience to green innovation, from ecological wisdom to sustainability, from gender equity to democracy and human rights. Each conversation is an invitation to reflect on where we are, what is changing, and how we can move forward together. In this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Adi B. M. Noor, Institute for Advanced Studies, University Malaya, Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, about his recent paper entitled Advancing Sustainability in Southeast Asia, Connecting Environmental Integrity, Social Equity, and Economic Resilience. Yeah, welcome, Dr. Adi B.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for your time. Your paper has covered many aspects about sustainability, right? But before we move, we talk more about your paper, could you introduce yourself, your position, your background, and you've been working on sustainability, marine resources, many things for a long time. Maybe can you share with our audience what first motivated you to work on two things, sustainability and the nature-based solution? I know that this has been your focus throughout your career. Yeah?
Thank you, Franci, for having me today and for make an effort to invite me to contribute to one of your papers. I'm actually a marine biologist and aquaculturist, and I have over 20 years of experience in the fishery sector. And I began my career with the Department of Fisheries as a fisheries officer. And I've dedicated my professional life advocating like sustainable aquaculture and marine science innovation. But 7 years ago, I made a significant transition from policy making to academia. And currently, I serve as the head of biodiversity for sustainable economy at the Center of Excellence. And I'm also the PhD program coordinator at the Institute for Advanced Studies, University of Malaya, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And in this role, I lead research and policy dialogues that connect science, sustainability, and also development.
Don't share too much because we also want that our audience to read, to download and read your paper and learn from your insights. But could you share maybe two or three insights or the major takeaways so the audience will know what will they get when they read your paper?
During my 20 years experience working with the community and with the government sectors and also in academia, so I've decided to stress on three aspects that you mentioned, which are environmental integrity, social equity, and economic resilience. Because the major takeaways that I include in this paper as sustainability in the region, it demands more than a technological fix, right? So it requires systematic reforms across ecological, social, and economic dimension because it's all interrelated with each other. So that's why I highlight case study like seaweed aquaculture, renewable energy, palm oil, green finance, and youth activism because these are the pathway to achieve the integrated sustainable development that we want to achieve in the future.
You believe that these three elements, environmental integrity, social equity, and economic resilience, should be together, yeah, because there's a strong connection. Then let's move to the next question. In your paper, also you describe our region, so this Asia, now 11 countries, yeah, with Timor Leste just joined ASEAN. So this Asia standing at the crossroad, you said, we are rich by extraordinary cultural diversity, ecological wealth, and also vulnerable, highly vulnerable to climate risk. In your views, Dr. Adibi, what makes this region so unique and so fragile at the same time?
So Southeast Asia previously has been neglected by the global. People don't look at our potential. But being Asian, so we have the unique situation here. Our extraordinary cultural diversity, our ecological wealth, including critical ecosystem like mangrove, coral reef, and tropical rainforest, which make us unique and important. And it is fragile because now, with the globalization, rapid industrialization, urban expansion, and also unsustainable resource extraction, which place unprecedented stress on this ecosystem. And at the same time, climate change and socioeconomic inequalities add to this vulnerability. So that's what makes us most climate vulnerable globally.
So there is this dilemma, yeah. At one hand, our region has a lot of richness. However, we are facing the challenge, the multi-crisis of environmental crisis and climate change. I'd like to quote your paper. You mentioned in your paper that the rapid economic growth in the region has lifted millions out of poverty, yeah. But also, it created tremendous environmental pressure. You speak that the Southeast Asia can demonstrate itself as a leader in sustainable development. Could you please share with us what kind of commitment required for the Southeast Asian leader and whom to reach such level to become a leader in sustainable development? What is your vision? What is your idea?
So it's a collective effort. And to demonstrate leadership in sustainable development, Southeast Asia require commitment from governments, regional bodies like ASEAN, private sectors, local communities, universities, academia, and so on. Because this include redefining prosperity to include ecological health, strengthening governance to reduce inequalities and environmental degradation. We also need to focus on investing in green finance and sustainable infrastructure. We have to empower our community and we have to engage with the young generation, especially youth, to build resilient and equitable futures. So that's why I think we need to work together collectively.
But then in the concept of sustainability, you cannot just focus solely on economic growth, right? Because then you kind of neglect the environmental and you put more environmental pressure. However, you know, like in this multi-crisis, a lot of conflict, wars, also all this climate pressure in the region. Like if you were in the government, how would you prioritize, you know, whether to put sustainability in your policy? Like, could you share your take?
First, we have to empower our politician. We need a political will. So we need to bring the ideas, like for example, in Malaysia to the parliament. We need to ensure that all these MPs, they know about sustainability. What is sustainability? So it's not just we know that sustainability development goal exists, but we don't practice or we don't do it in our action. For example, if we want to build commercial area, or if we want to be for in, like in Penang, Malaysia, underwater tunnel, we have to engage with the fishers community about the impact of this development to their economic activities. So whether this development can destroy the habitat of the fish, whether this can limit the movement of the fishes. So the engagement is really important prior to the development. So you can include these stakeholders in the development process.
And do you think that concept of sustainability also need to be translated into like a strict policy by the government or even in the law and regulation?
Yes, I think we have to include in the law, and we have to enforce it. And because this can't be like an immediate effect. It's a long-term effect. You can see this in the long term. You can cut tree within 1 minute, but you need 100 years to grow the tree. So as simple as that, but we need to work together, and we need to empower our community. So that's why one of my research is to focus on the ESD, education for sustainable development, at the beginning of the in the primary school. So we want to see whether the ESD has been imparted or embed in our education policy.
You need to educate more people, the community and the youth, the young people, yeah, so they kind of understand and has sustainability embedded in their mindset.
Yes, exactly.
So you've been mentioning that our region, the potential, the richness and the challenges. What are, let's say, two major challenges that prevent Southeast Asia today from taking up the next step towards advancing sustainability?
Actually, we have more than two, right? But I just address some of the challenges which is related to our region. Persistent poverty and inequality, limited access to education and healthcare, especially in rural and indigenous communities. We have environmental degradation from deforestation. In the ocean, we have problem with overfishing and pollution. So in terms of technical or technology, we have insufficient technical knowledge and financing for climate smart agriculture, because our region have potential to produce food for the world. So climate smart agriculture can be the direction in the future. And there are also governance gap in enforcing sustainability. Like we mentioned just now, we should include in our law. So if we don't have, or if we have lack of enforcement, so we can achieve sustainability. Regardless, we have the nice policy, but if we don't enforce, then nothing can happen. And we there's a lack of coordination, especially at our regional level. So that's why we need to relook into this, and that should be our priority in the future.
I'd like to move to the next topic that's very close to your heart. Seaweed. Yeah, seaweed cultivation. Because audience, Dr. Adibi, also known in Malaysia and around as Dr. Seaweed, because he's been focusing on working in seaweed development, also giving training. I'd like to ask you that, okay, seaweed cultivation is often described as nature-based solution with both social and economic benefits, right? Can you share more this topic that very close to you? And what makes seaweed such an important opportunity, particularly for coastal communities in Southeast Asia that live nearby the sea?
So I've started my journey as a seaweed scientist after I graduated during my bachelor degree. Then since then, I felt that this species have a very special, how do I say, very special look, and not many people like in my country know about this. So I feel that okay, then someone need to bring this to the public, you know, to the policy level. And when I after more than 10 years involved with the seaweed industry, then I realized that the seaweed cultivation is a key nature-based solution because it offers environmental benefits such as carbon sequestration, nutrient removal from coastal waters, and also ocean acidification buffering. In terms of social and economic, seaweed cultivation provides stable income, especially for women in coastal community. We have a women community in Bali, for example. So I visited the community and there, it's like their daily routine is so nice and very peaceful because they work closely together, entertaining or managing the farm. Then after they harvest the seaweed, they brought the seaweed to the shore and process the seaweed into products such as cosmetics products and also as salad or superfood. So this give the benefit to the community in Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines because it supports food security, offer livelihood diversification, and also enhance ecological sustainability through integrated multi-trophy aquaculture system, which align with circular bioeconomy initiative. So that's why I feel that seaweed have all in it, so be it the environmental, social, and also economic aspect.
When we talk about seaweed, right, for food, is this product seaweed is also part of our Southeast Asian diet? You know, because I know if we go to Japanese restaurant, you see seaweed in their menu, right? Is seaweed part of our diet in the region, or this is something new?
Right. So some coastal community consume this as their traditional dish, right? Such as coastal community in the Philippines, right? So they consume seaweed as gulaman or lato. However, in other countries such as Japan or Korea, so seaweed is part of their diet, or we can say as a staple food, their staple food. And they started the industry or the cultivation like 100 years ago, right? Right. So our seaweed industry started like more than 60 years ago as a food ingredients only, not as a direct consumption. I mean in the mass consumption, right? Except for some of the coastal community. But our seaweed, the tropical seaweed, have multiple benefits or in terms of the nutritional compositions. Like we have high dietary fiber in seaweed, we have vitamins, we have micronutrients, and we have our seaweed have active ingredients such as antioxidant, which can benefit human health. So that's why when I visited Indonesia last 2 months ago, I went to Surabaya to visit seaweed cultivation in the pond. Then I asked the farmers, have you tried your seaweed? Because he's been cultivating the seaweed for more than 50 years. He said, no, we just sell the seaweed to the processor, because the processor will process the seaweed into agar, right? So agar, you can only see the powder. You don't see the form of seaweed. So then I prepared the seaweed as a salad to them. So they consume that seaweed, and they really, after they eat it, they said, like, wow, it's nice. That's why I told them that, yes, we should start consume this seaweed, because this seaweed has a lot of benefits, especially for human health, for your gut health system, especially. So then I realized that, oh, okay, there still need a lot of work have to be done in order to create awareness amongst the seaweed farmers.
So this is also kind of your side quest, yeah? You want to promote how to consume the seaweed as a superfood.
Yes.
Okay, very interesting. Exactly. Interesting. And before I move to the next question, I still want to ask about, you mentioned that for the coastal communities, because you have direct access to the sea, then this in the aquaculture, you can also consider seaweed as a product that bring social and economic benefits, right? And the technical question, how do you make sure that sustainability is being highlighted or being emphasized in this, let's say, coastal community production, be it seaweed or other aquaculture? Maybe give one tips, like how you always put sustainability, because in like every economy, right, when you extract resource from the nature, sometimes you think only about profit. So in the context of seaweed and other aquaculture product,
the coastal community relies on the ocean as their income and also for their food, right? So one head of household, for example, one man can go for fishing and get about 2 to 3 kilograms of fish per time they go out to the sea and catch the fish. Then they bring back the fish and maybe keep 1 kilo for the family and 2 kilo sell to the customer and get the money. During the low tide, for example, the wife will go to the shore and, like you mentioned, extract other organisms, marine organisms such as sea cucumber, abalone, and other shellfish, either for their own consumption or to sell. So these are the activities that the coastal community will do every day. So when you introduce integrated multi-trophic aquaculture, you can start your own seaweed farm in front of your house, and underneath, you can cultivate sea cucumber, abalone, and maybe fish together in one system, so that you don't need to wait for the low tide to go and find shellfish and go out to the sea and do fishing. So with the understanding and the technology that we provide to them, then they can just manage that system in front of their house effectively. And at the same time, they can take care of their health, because when you go when you do a lot of tough job, right? Because fisherman is a 3D job, dangerous, dirty, and difficult. So it require a lot of energy, a lot of strength. So it will affect your muscle, your health, occupational health, and hazard. And a lot of the coastal community, they have a problem with cataracts, right? Because they're exposed too long under the sun without any protection. So this can reduce the health issues when you just go and manage the farm. So after for seaweed, after 30 to 45 days, you can harvest and you can sell or you can consume the seaweed. For fish, maybe 4 months to 6 months, you can harvest. Sea cucumber, maybe you can wait for like 8 months and then you get a marketable size. And it's more sustainable because you don't harvest the small or juvenile and then you sell it. So you let it grow and then you let the juvenile to grow in the natural condition. Or you can take the juvenile, put in your system, and then you grow it. So it's more control. So this can create, like the community themselves can manage the area. So this can be part of the Marine Protected Area Initiative as well. So that we don't allow them to extract more than they need.
Sustainability also means that we need to strike the balance, what is needed, but also use technological innovation, yeah, and nature-based solution.
And also traditional knowledge.
Tradition, so that, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Traditional knowledge is also important, yeah.
Because the community know sometimes even better way than the modern way in managing the resources, yeah. Okay. Next question, Doc. I want to ask you, I'd like to ask you, you mentioned in your paper a lot about youth movement and community initiative, yeah? Because, of course, we have all this, we call it the intergenerational dialogue, yeah? Because you have this millennials, Gen Z, Alpha, they have a different way in seeing the world. Why youth movement become kind of very important actor in shaping sustainability? And how could a government institution support this actor, youth?
Right. So the government and institution, they can support youth movement and also community by integrating sustainability education into curricula. So like I mentioned to you, we have education for sustainable development policy in Malaysia. So it just not been put into action, especially at the school level in their curriculum, right? So we want each of the teachers or lecturers they include sustainable or sustainability as part of their curricula. Right, and government and institution, they also can provide platform for youth to participate in policy advocacy, for example, and maybe some of the community projects, and they can also provide funding for youth-led environmental action, and they can also promote digital and cultural expressions of sustainability, because it's not only limited to, yeah, you need to do sustainable farming, for example, but in terms of arts, it can also be the agenda or initiative for youth. And because this will foster the partnership between youth, so the youth feel that their voice being heard, right? Especially in the climate dialogues and also regional cooperation frameworks.
Back to your paper, you mentioned that sustainability requires strong governance and corporate accountability. So we also talk about the private sector. What changes are most needed to ensure that environmental and social costs are no longer ignored?
I'm quite happy to hear from COP30 in Brazil that they have established or they have agreed to give more funding on green financing, right? So to ensure strong governance and corporate accountability, changes needed which include implementing transparent and enforceable environmental regulations, applying economic instruments such as payment for ecosystem services and biodiversity offset, because this can ensure the sustainability of the projects or the program or the initiative that you have set in the beginning. I think without green financing mechanism, we couldn't achieve the sustainability. So that's why, like I mentioned to you, I'm happy to hear from COP30 in Brazil recently that they have set up a new scheme that provide more funding.
Pro-sustainability policies like green financing is needed in Southeast Asia, yeah, to encourage actors to also consider sustainability. Because yes, without clear regulation and incentive, nobody will follow, right? They will keep the status quo, the common practice.
Because this will make the effort continuous. So hence translate to sustainability. Because based on my experience, for example, if we conduct a sustainable research related project, if we don't have funding, then we have to stop. So that's why we need support not only from the government funding, but also from the private sectors.
And do you think there is still opportunity in our region between the countries at the regional level to learn and to collaborate on sustainability in multi-country, let's say Malaysia, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia? Do you already see a lot of avenue and opportunity, or still to be expanded?
I involved with the one international project initiated by International Development Research Center based in Canada. So they gave us funding to conduct research on nature-based solution. So we collaborate with our research partners from Thailand, from Cambodia, Vietnam. So it's mostly Southeast Asia country. Then we every quarterly, so we will meet in, for example, in Bangkok, and we learn from each other. So we have this peer learning workshop that we share about our experience, our challenges, and we get the feedback from our collaborator or maybe partner who might face the same situation, but they have the solution for it. So we use that platform as a learning process.
So like this kind of regional exchange and dialogue is needed at the regional level, yeah? Then first, you don't feel that you are doing this alone. You have colleagues, you have allies working on sustainability. And two, you can learn from each other. Maybe the solution work in Malaysia, maybe this solution work in Thailand. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Adibi. Any last word, maybe for our audience regarding sustainability, regarding our future, our children and grandchildren, sustainability, climate change? Any last word?
Sustainability starts from home. So from home, it will go out to the society, to whatever you do in your life. So when you practice sustainability in the house, then this can ensure our future generation will advocate sustainability until the end.
Thank you, Dr. Adibi M. Noor, for speaking to us today and for sharing your valuable insights to our audiences. And stay tuned for the next episode of Bull Talks, Dialogues and Insights from Southeast Asia, where we continue exploring the ideas, people, and stories driving change across Southeast Asia.